Having selected a spot for their entry, they activated the alien equipment and instantly permeated through the brick wall, or as one of them said, we were sucked through the building. They emerged into a room that was occupied by an elderly woman that looked to be in her 90s. She was sitting alone in a wheelchair in one corner of the Tibid room unit. There was no one else in the room with her, she appeared to be sleeping. The television was on, but the sound was turned down. When they passed through the wall, they did not feel a thing. The composition of the wall became as a whiff of smoke, but the energy field that emanated from the box caused the television and the lights in that room and those in the hall adjacent to the room to flicker. They had rehearsed entering a similar building back at the base before attempting this exercise, but they did not anticipate having the attendants converge on them all at once as they did during that exercise. There were 6 attendants on duty that night at the nursing home. When the lights started flickering in the twing of the building, all 6 of them went running to that location. The committee member whose job it was to distract the attendants instead had them so nervous from the surprise inspection that they overreacted. As the attendants converged on the room where the committee members had just entered through the brick wall, the committee members had no choice but to subdue and paralyze the attendants one by one as they entered the room. One touch of the alien wand to the head of the attendants rendered them paralyzed. The committee members then placed penny-sized discs on the temples of the attendants and the attendants remained standing and fully conscious but unable to move or talk. The committee had never paralyzed healthy normal people before and never out of a controlled setting. They had 6 people standing limp inside of that room and looked like living mannequins with nothing but their eyes moving. Because the committee had not planned to interfere with any of the staff or of the operation of the nursing home, they aborted the mission. This was a training mission, away. To judge the difficulty they might encounter when entering a private building with the intention of removing a person without rousing suspicion. In the past they harvested from hospitals and nursing homes the number of people they needed with the help of insiders installed covertly into the management of those institutions. The new strategy allowed them to harvest without any inside connection. The motivation being that they could borrow people from any location at the time of their choosing. It also reduced their exposure by placing fewer operatives in the field and in the management of private institutions. The committee members removed the discs from the heads of the attendants, freeing them from the paralysis. Although the attendants were wide awake, they dropped like a ton of bricks as their legs gave away from under them the instant the discs were removed. They were disoriented, which was good because the 4 committee guys were in a panic and needed the extra time for damage control. 50 or more patients were suddenly left unattended, and the fact that anyone could at any moment walk into the building and find all the attendants piled in one of the rooms was a near disaster. The paralysis wore off about 1 or 2 minutes after the removal of the alien buttons from the heads of the attendants, but each attendant was affected differently. Some took longer to come out of the paralysis, according to the one member who remained behind to make sure all the attendants revived. According to him, it took more than 5 minutes for all the attendants to snap out of their dazed and disoriented minds. They remembered nothing of what happened to them. Not why they were all in one location of the building or why they were all laying on the floor. As each individual regained equilibrium soon after the committee members left, the first of them to reach a phone called the fire department. The attendant had surmised that carbon monoxide or some other poisonous gas had leaked into the building from one of the furnaces. None of the members of the staff remembered there was an inspection in progress prior to them passing out. Apparently the discs not only paralyzed people, but also left them with amnesia about what they experienced during and just prior to the time they were paralyzed. The committee members who were monitoring the phone lines the whole time continued to do so. They listened in on the conversation between the staff member and the fire and police departments. They made sure things were under control before they left. Only 2 of the attendants were taken to a hospital for observation and were released that same night. The others had no problems and declined to go to the hospital. No damage was done, and the final police report indicated that none of the elderly patients were affected. The report stated that the staff might have succumbed to the fumes from a cleaning solution that was found near the area they had their dizzy spells. Shortly after that fiasco, those in charge of the program pulled the plug on the use of nursing homes for good. No one will ever know. They did so for two reasons. First, they knew that all the newly rejuvenated old people would eventually draw attention and possibly give credence to the UFO phenomena. Secondly, the cost of re-establishing their lives of hundreds or thousands of people was prohibitive. The money that was earmarked for the committee was sufficient for the committee's covert operations. There was no contingency fund for humanitarian services to re-establish rejuvenated humans. If they increased their budget by an additional few million to allow for the added services, they risked becoming visible to the Congress, which ultimately funds all government programs, even those they know nothing about. In the years during the Cold War, it was simpler to finance clandestine operations, but after the collapse of the Soviet Union, funneling money to the committee was a covert operation in itself. Increasingly, the funding sources had become the committee's Achilles heel. The committee was told that the funding they received was still appropriated from the National Treasury, but that would not be the source in the future. Next headline, Second Encounter. Until the committee member that was abducted and allowed to observe the aliens had his second encounter. It happened 4 months after his first. They took him while he was working in his office during daylight hours. There were others in the building at the time, but he was working alone when it happened. It was around noon that he was taken. He was eating a sandwich that one of his colleagues had picked up for him in the cafeteria down the hall. He was eating his lunch while going over a report he had to turn in that afternoon. An instant later he was in an alien ship without his sandwich. They did not give him an explanation of why he was not allowed to finish his lunch before whisking him away. Not that he asked, but it was certainly on his mind, and he knew he could keep no secrets from them. There was a woman in the craft with him. She was on a surgical table, and he was standing nearby. She was young, and somehow he knew her exact age. She was 19 years old. She was naked, yet he felt no sexual desires toward her, despite her attractive features. She was lying on the surgical table with a horrified look on her face. She was terrified and confused with no clue of what was going on. She was not able to talk, but he knew all her thoughts, a privilege he did not have the last time he was abducted. She kept her eyes on him, and in her mind kept asking, "Why are you doing this to me?" She was not sure if she was being raped or if she had been in some accident and was in the emergency room of a hospital. He knew her thoughts, but it wasn't mutual. She did not know his. He had the urge to speak to her and give her comfort, but he was unable to, verbally or telepathically. He knew she was 3 months pregnant, but he didn't know how he knew those things, or why. As he stood there watching her whole life was made known to him. He then realized why the aliens were giving him information gradually, while letting the hundreds of questions that popped into his head go unanswered. No human mind is big enough to hold but a fraction of what there is to know, and only piecemeal at that. The little information that he did receive about her was overwhelming his mind. But why did he need to know all about her? He felt he knew her but did not recall ever meeting her. He watched as the aliens removed the fetus from her body, and then carried it to an adjacent room. Another alien came back moments later and inserted another fetus into her. He was not told if it was the same fetus they took out of her or if it was a different one. If it was the same one, what had been done to it? They told him it was not yet time for him to know that answer. He was allowed to know that this girl was genetically linked to him. In fact, he was her biological father, even though he never met her mother. Her mother was implanted with his semen on board that same ship 19 years earlier. That fetus was his grandson. He was told that he fathered many others like her, and it was not important for him to have contact with any of them, nor would it be possible for him to have contact with them, even if he was allowed to know who they all were. He was not allowed to know the identity of the girl, his daughter, other than what they had already let him know, or from which city she was from. She could be from anywhere in the world, they told him, and after they returned him to his office he would never see her again. The aliens told Bill that the physical body was of little importance. It was a mere vessel that held the essence of what humans are. It made no difference that the girl and countless others are related to his body and DNA. The identity of a person had no bearing to the physical body other than looks. His genes did not pass on any part of the mind or soul, which is one and the same. However, disposition and some traits that a child shares with its parents are learned from them as they grow up and are influenced by the parents, and not necessarily a part of the gene pool. The ambiguity of that last statement was not explained to Bill, and the aliens did not feel they needed to clarify it. The whole scope of what the aliens are doing here on Earth would never be revealed to humanity, although there would be limited information given to some, like the information Bill received. There have been many throughout history that was given knowledge by the aliens, mostly in the form of new technology and ideas. From whom the information was coming from was not told to Bill. Some of the things that were divulged to him seemed pointless and made no sense and sounded very bizarre. Eat bananas on Wednesday, feed the lions every Friday. Other statements were unclear and confusing, save the rainforest, destroy the trees. Bill felt that many of the answers to his questions, when he received them, were purposely vague, others completely puzzling, and occasionally some were mean-spirited. He believed that they had tried to provoke anger in him a few times. After he was returned to his office, he looked at the clock on the wall and determined he was gone for 1 hour. He had no recollection of them taking him or returning him. He found himself sitting at the desk in the same position he was in before his abduction. His half-eaten sandwich was still there. If it weren't for the fact that he was in an area with alien objects strewn all around him, he would have chalked it up to having fallen asleep at his desk and dreamt it all. The experience and his memory of it were clear, and he pondered what the aliens told him about his offspring not being his. He had 2 children at home with whom he had a strong bond and felt cheated and overwhelmed at the thought that he sired untold numbers of other children who are all strangers to him. He was depressed after that encounter. No one in his department noticed that he had been abducted. He took the rest of that day off and told no one in his office what had happened to him. As he drove home, he couldn't help but see a little bit of himself in everyone he passed. He never felt that his body was all that special. Why then did they use him as a human stud? Next headline, Envy stymies the committee. 2 weeks went by before he told the committee members about his last abduction. When he did, rather than being excited about that revelation, his colleagues were envious and puzzled why no others in the group had been given the privilege he seems to be enjoying. There was some jealousy in the committee, and his colleagues were less interested in what he had learned from the latest encounter. One of his colleagues accused him of making up the stories. They could not understand why he was singled out from the rest of them. Was he smarter than they? Was he better looking? Was his blood type special? They wanted to know why the aliens could not make themselves known to the whole committee. After all, they were in this together, they reminded Bill. The committee members had no doubt that aliens existed, but they had a difficult time believing Bill's abduction stories. They thought he was becoming delusional from the many years of working around the freak show that had become their labs and their lives. Bill was accused of dominating the committee meetings because he claimed to have more knowledge about the aliens than the rest. During that time, his colleagues voted to have him expelled from the committee. The higher-ups who felt his link with the aliens was real vetoed that vote. They then made matters worse by putting him in charge of the committee. His colleagues rebelled, and a mediator was brought in to patch up the rift. But it didn't work. Lack of cooperation between the members caused the program to be suspended and everyone went home. 2 months passed before the committee was reactivated. Presumably the department continued operating during that time, probably under the leadership of one of the higher-ups. An operation of the magnitude could not easily be brought to a stop. None of the documents indicated what went on while the committee was absent. Bill Smith was again put in charge of the new committee. Some of the original members were reinstated, others were transferred to different departments. Bill spent the 2 months vacationing in the Hawaiian Islands. While he was there, the aliens visited with him every day. He advanced to where he was allowed to roam freely aboard the alien craft. The craft moved at speeds that are inconceivable if taken out of the realm of science fiction, he told the committee. The aliens let him choose the destination, and as quickly as it formed in his mind, the craft was halfway there. He visited every country on Earth and even spent time on Earth's moon and other moons in the solar system, but they were not mentioned by name. The aliens declined his request to visit the planet Jupiter, a favorite of his since childhood. His father had bought him a telescope when he was 9, and he spent countless nights watching the night skies, and the rings around Jupiter blew him away. They told him that other parts of the solar system were still off limits to him, but that possibly in the future he would be able to visit a few of the planets. It frustrated Bill that the aliens did not indulge others on the committee. It made it difficult for him to share his excitement with them, since they remained suspicious of him and his tales of adventure. All the committee members did spend time with the aliens and presumably been to other planets, but they were not allowed to remember their adventures. Probably a good thing. Bill told them that they were treated no different than the majority of those who were abducted, except that he was able to verify that it did happen to them. His colleagues questioned him on why they were taken but not allowed to remember like he was able to. Bill could not give them answers. He could only relay to them what happened to him, and only what the aliens allowed him to know happened to him. Many of his experiences remain blocked, he told his colleagues. The aliens told Bill to discourage his colleagues from going to anyone for regression therapy. Since the time Bill told his colleagues that they had been abducted, some of them did not believe him and were considering undergoing regression to confirm that it did take place. The aliens pointed out to Bill that they can implant whatever memories they wish into the subconscious mind of humans, and that many of the episodes that are recalled by those who have been abducted are intentionally painful and misleading. They are programmed that way, to dissuade the abducted from learning the truth of what really happened to them. A truth that is not for them to know, and is none of their business to know. Bill was told that humans in the Western world have the illusion of personal rights. That belief is not prevalent in the rest of the world. Humans do not own their bodies, they are on loan to them. To own something, the aliens told Bill, means you have total control of it. What human has control of his body or anything else for that matter? No human can keep his body from dying, or from becoming ill. The only thing that humans can do is feed and take care of their bodies, not much more complicated than putting fuel in a car and changing the oil once in a while. Humans are not even in dominion of their own soul. All the bodies on this planet belong to the aliens. The aliens did not disclose to Bill who owns the soul, just that they, the aliens, had no claim to that part of humanity. On his last two encounters with the aliens, they showed him how to perform some of the medical procedures that he and the committee had been struggling with during some of their experiments. The new information helped to convince his colleagues that he was either a genius or did, in fact, have contact with the aliens. Because of the complexity of what the aliens demonstrated to him, Bill could only perform the procedures on the alien craft. The craft provided a level of purity that did not exist anywhere outside of it. It was also less strenuous working in the craft, similar to being on the moon with its reduced gravitational pull. Working in the ship allowed them to perform with ease and speed that was impossible anywhere else. The purity of the air helped them to think clearer, and they performed superhuman feats while in the ship. Bill showed his colleagues how to repair a severely damaged heart. They operated on a woman badly injured in a one car accident. She was drunk and ran off the road after leaving a bar. Like the rest of the people that the committee acquired, she had no family, and no friends that could be identified. The hospital that she was taken to had given up on her and expected her to die that morning. When the committee received her, she was already declared brain dead by her physician. Her body was still alive, but her heart and liver were damaged beyond human ability to repair them. The committee was going to repair her heart and then repair her damaged liver. Bill and two others on the committee were accomplished surgeons prior to coming to the program. Bill was good at his medical profession, but an invisible force far superior to his earthly knowledge guided his hands, plus he had the use of some of the alien gadgets. During the open heart surgery, Bill left the craft for only a moment to get more sutures. They didn't have a nurse, so they took turns fetching things. He left at a point where the woman was stabilized. When he returned 3 minutes later, he found the other two surgeons standing over the dead body. They both had a confused look on their faces. Outside the craft, they told Bill that everything that they were doing during the operation seemed clear and made sense until he left the craft. They then reverted to knowing only what they had learned in medical school and in their practice before coming into the program. There was no mention whether the woman was connected to life support, pumps and IVs to keep her stable during the operation. Next headline, Gift of Knowledge. Apparently the aliens gave Bill a gift that he was not aware of. He had a reservoir of knowledge installed into his subconscious mind that the others didn't have. The information only came to him as he needed it, and was somehow shared with those who need to know while assisting him. It was obvious to Bill that he was being primed for something larger than himself, but he wasn't sure for what purpose. Much of what was stored in his head by the aliens was not available to anyone but him. He was not aware of all his capabilities and only became so when he actually needed the information. He was the best doctor in the world and getting better by the day. He was able to diagnose and repair afflictions that baffled the best doctors. But he could not publish any of it. The knowledge was not at his disposal to do as he wished. It came when he needed it for a work in progress and left as soon as the job was done. He tried many times to write down some of the procedures soon after he performed them but was unable to make any sense of what he accomplished. Therefore, he was unable to share his knowledge with his colleagues, which served to intensify the distrust that already existed between him and the other members. Some committee members saw that as confirmation that Bill was isolating himself. At some point, Bill decided it was counterproductive for him to work with the others. He knew the feeling was mutual. All the committee members had become uncomfortable working around him. They witnessed a marked change in Bill and weren't sure if he was man, machine, or a combination of the two. In their collective eyes, he was not human anymore. Bill resigned from the committee and told his superiors he would work on his own projects. Bill was absent from the office most of the time. When he was there, he breached the security system with his unusual mode of coming and going. He literally popped in and popped out as if he had mastered the alien powers of teleportation. The security system that monitored everyone entering and leaving the premises showed that Bill, who once was the first to arrive at work and the last to leave, was now bypassing the security system and the guards at the gate. This violated all the rules that everyone else had to conform to. It was prohibited, not to mention impossible, for anyone to enter or leave the building without passing through security first. Yet Bill was observed working in his office many times, even when the security roster indicated that he was not in the building. Bill's supervisor approached him with that concern, assuring Bill that he understood how he was able to breach the security envelope, and asked him to try and adhere to the same rules imposed on the rest of the department for the sake of morale. Although Bill was a much humbler person than he once was, he felt that his special circumstances allowed him certain privileges. He explained to his superior that because of his new abilities, the aliens expected more from him and required more of his time. He came and left by way of the aliens' supernatural means many times during the day and night and could not be restricted by jealous bickering. He was not beaming up and down from the alien spaceship like they do on Star Trek. He simply appeared and disappeared and did so only in his office, so as not to disrupt anyone's sensitivities or feelings. He said, Bill's boss recognized the fact that no one could stop him from doing what he needed or wanted to do. Bill was the only genuine connection to the aliens the committee had, so he conceded to his requirements. Bill had become the committee. No other member made any substantial contribution to the program. At the weekly meetings, the whole focus was on him and what he had discovered, and most important, what he was willing to divulge to the rest of the members. At one of the committee meetings, Bill suggested that they should not add any more people to the program. The number of people that were involved with the alien craft was already excessive, he told them. Since it was impossible to shift people into other less secretive programs, he suggested that the program shrink through attrition. And though he was exempt from the high security measures, he was against lowering them and had some suggestions on how to make them more secure and less burdensome on the members. The aliens gave Bill something that was similar to a computer chip to be implemented in the new security system he was proposing. It was the size of a period at the end of a sentence. The chip could be placed anywhere on the body. It monitored the location of the recipient 24 hours a day. When placed on the body, the chip embedded itself below the skin and remained visible as a freckle or small blemish. That alien device eliminated the need to do a body search and allowed the members to come and go with considerably less restraint. The alien unit that monitored the chip was fashioned to look and perform as if it was a man-made machine. The chip contained all applicable information about the individual and allowed that person access only to his or her assigned place of duty. Surprisingly, there was no objection by committee members or from many of the people who worked there. Everyone was happy to do away with the old and humiliating system that often included body cavity searches. Those in the program had become accustomed to their every movement being monitored, so inserting a tiny device under the skin was a much less intrusive part of the job. How much control Bill had over his superiors at the covered base was not known. But when Bill suggested something, there were few that challenged him anymore. Those that did, usually yield to his point of view before the committee meeting adjourned. It was obvious that his insight was much keener than anyone there, which could explain why they deferred to his ideas. His manner was so gentle that it was difficult to get mad at him. He never lost his temper and was always cool, calm and collected. Did he have the committee under a spell? He himself was under alien influence. The person that was known as Bill faded slowly away. And something much more than he ever was or could have been on his own emerged. In every physical aspect he was the same person. For those who didn't know him before his conversion, the slow transformation he went through was hardly noticeable. He seemed normal, except for the fact that his IQ and other abilities were off the charts. Next headline, Meat Market. The committee added 5 living human bodies to its inventory. They procured the 5 mortally injured men from across the country. Details about where they were taken from or from what they were dying was not made known. They kept them stored in the incubator room until a decision was made on what to do with them. The military requested that 4 bodies be released to them upon conversion. Most on the committee were in favor of giving the military what they asked for. It was enough that they had to keep 1 Frankenstein in their midst. 5 Frankensteins made everyone who worked around them extremely uncomfortable. The decision to give up the bodies to the military was made while Bill was away for a few weeks. When Bill discovered what was about to take place, he intervened. He was against giving the military possession of the bodies. There was no explanation to why he was against it. He was the only one who was able to stop the bodies from being taken. The military had made plans to acquire the zombie bodies and had no intention of delaying that transaction. However, the action was delayed indefinitely. Apparently, Bill had influenced the High Command in other than earthly means. Bill never made it part of the record, but he told one of his trusted friends that he was with the aliens when they dropped in on a certain army general and abducted him. During the abduction, Bill was not privy to all that was suggested to the general by the aliens, but he was made aware that the general would put on hold his request for the living bodies. There was nothing else done to the general at that time, and the whole episode took less than 10 minutes, including the time it took to return him to his bedroom. That same week, while on board the alien craft, Bill found himself in the same room with one of the bodies that the committee had recently converted. Bill was told that they were going to let him leave his body and enter into the other body. At first, The whole idea terrified Bill. The aliens assured him that it was strictly his choice. If he was not ready for that kind of experience, it was fine with them, and they would put it off for another time. He decided to do it. They instructed him to enter into an adjacent room. The room glowed with the same color of yellow as did the room he and the committee called the incubator room.